Hello and welcome to Patriotic History. Today's date is Friday the 11th of June 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live tonight at RadioAlbion.com because I have my co-host with me today, the Patriarch from the Patriotic Arts Community. Patriarch, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thanks. Looking forward to this podcast. Doing very well. Sun's shining. Can't moan.
Yes, it's great to be back here once again. I did enjoy our first episode last week. I did forget to actually say that we should be very grateful to Hallandir for providing that lovely intro for us that we have there. And I do recommend people check out Hallandir's work. You'll find him at SoundCloud, Bandcamp, YouTube. I think he's on quite a few different platforms. He's a wonderful musician and a really, really great guy. And he came up with that intro for us really quickly. Somebody you can really rely on, just the sort of people we need in our movement, like yourself as well, Patriarch. And you also run the Patriotic Arts Community as well. Do you want to just let listeners know what goes on there and how they can find you?
Yeah, so the Patriotic Arts Community is a community of artists and, well, creators, basically. So, you know, you could be a poet, a writer, illustrator, graphic designer, any kind of creative medium that, you know, we come together and we do a monthly theme. So we decide on the theme via poll. And then we basically create something in relation to the theme, and then we tend to make a video or do a collaborative video of all the best entries, and then it's just about putting out content which is geared towards nationalists and our people.
So if anyone's creative.
Sorry.
Where are they going to find you then? Where are these creative types going to find you?
So we're at the, if you go on to Telegram, just Patriotic Arts Community. There's also the channel. If you don't want to actually get involved, you can just see the archives of all the different creations, and that's Patriotic Arts. And if you want to follow my personal channel, the Patriarchs, you can find me on YouTube or most of the social media, such as Gab, Odyssey, and so on.
And of course, if you're listening to this somewhere else, you can find us at RadioAlbion.com. Well, once again, we're going to be looking at Sumer tonight, and tonight's episode, I'm hoping, is going to be really thought-provoking, that there's going to be a lot of information in it that I think is going to really surprise people. Before we get into that, I really wanted to correct myself from last week. Last week, I talked a little bit about the city that Cain built in Sumer, and I said that the city was called Waka, and I was actually wrong there. It's not called Waka. And L.A. Waddell writes in his book, Makers of Civilization in Race and History, that the city of Enoch, we have seen, is admitted by all the leading biblical experts to be identical with the city Unog or Unak, and latterly Uruk of the Sumerians, and identical with the Erech of the later Hebrew Old Testament text. So what he's talking about there is the city that Cain built, which he named after his son Enoch. He called the city Enoch, and they believe that the city of Uruk in Sumer is that actual city that that Cain built. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later on, because it's quite an important city in the first phase of civilization. And I also wanted to talk a little bit about why Adam was white. I mean, last week we said we're going to use the Bible as a historical source, and we pointed out that the people in there that it was talking about are white. But some people might say, well, how do you know that they were white? Well, Adam himself was white, and his name means that he was white, because his name means red. Flavius Josephus tells us that he was named that because he was named after the red soil. But it appears that the red soil itself was named after Adam. And the reason why Adam was named Adam was because he went red in the face. He blushed. And there's only one race that that blushes, particularly with shame, and that is the white race. And obviously, when you look through the Bible and you hear about this farming people, this civilized farming people that came up with a system of law and an ethnocentric system of government and policy and politics. I mean, it really can only be white people. But really, just the name itself, Adam, tells us that they were white. And then when we get to Noah and his three sons, we're told by the church that Japhet was the European one. And if you've got three sons, you've got three brothers with the same father and the same mother, then they're all going to be the same ethnicity. So when the church tells us that Japhet was of European ethnicity, what they mean is that Shem was of European ethnicity as well, and Ham was of European ethnicity. They were all white, basically, and you can trace the history of these nations, which are all spoken about in the Bible. It tells us that the names of the sons and the nations that actually came from these three sons, and they all started out white, and some of them turned non-white over time, and we'll be looking at some of these nations and mentioning some of them tonight. But I just wanted to clear that up at the beginning, so I don't want people to think that we're talking about modern Jews today when we're referring to some of these people from the Old Testament. The modern Jews today didn't really become the modern Jews today until after the time of Christ, really. In 150 BC, they blended with a group of people called the Edomites, and then after that they blended with the Khazars and then with the Europeans. And even by the time when they blended with the Edomites, they were already beginning to look more like the Arabs, because the Edomites themselves were an Arab tribe. And again, this is why they rejected Jesus, and Jesus rejected them and said that they did not have the same father as him, because they were different people by that time. And I think we can tell that races that occupy territories change over time, because if you were to look at Detroit today and you would say, well, Detroit is majority black, and then if you were to look back 100 years ago and you were to say, well, that means that Henry Ford must have been black, because they're all black in Detroit today, because Henry Ford built his cities in Detroit, and that's where the Ford Motor Car Company started. And of course, Henry Ford wasn't black, but you have black people there today. So we have to be very careful looking at places and countries, how they are today, and we have to remember that they may not have been like that all the time, and there may have been different people that were living there in the first place. And I think we're going to see a lot of that as we go through this series. Do you want to add anything to that, Patriarch?
Yes, I guess one thing I always kind of try and reflect on is, you know, we're going to talk about the flood, which we've established last week, that was a regional flood. But since then, obviously, you know, Noah was supposed to be the kind of the, you know, spawned the rest of the races, and as you mentioned, that, you know, the three sons obviously were white, but if we was that, say that was say 6,000 years ago, we've got statues and such like that from the ancient Greece, and we see that their phenotype is pretty much, it hasn't really changed too much from the original Greeks to the modern day Europeans. So that's kind of like half the time span. And if we were to take another, say, 3,000 years, I mean, the chance of having such distinct racial phenotypes is, you know, is kind of slim to none, really.
That's a good point there, that they wouldn't have changed. And I think we can also look at the statues and the sculptures, and we can see that the statues and the sculptures and the representations in the church of the Old Testament peoples, they've always been European. Always been European. You won't find any statues or representations of modern day Jews in any of the churches. It was always just taken for granted that the people of the Old Testament were European, because at the time, when we had the Roman Empire, I mean, obviously the Romans were white, and that stretched right the way across the Near East. Constantinople used to be seen as the center of Christendom, and that's in the middle of Turkey now. So just because we now live in Europe and we're limited to Europe and we spread out from there to America, that doesn't mean we were always like that. I mean, what I think we learned last week is that white people really started in Mesopotamia and then spread out from Mesopotamia, which was the center of civilization. I mean, why would white people be shivering in the north if they didn't have to be? If we had a center of civilization in the Fertile Crescent, then that's where most white people are going to be. The only whites that are going to be in the north are going to be there because they're looking for minerals and they're looking for resources. But we're going to get into all of that in detail as we go through this series. But as you pointed out there, when we talk about Adam and we talk about Noah's sons, we're talking about the white race. So where did these other races come from? Well, there's an explanation of where they came from that we will get into tonight. But before we get into that, I'll just start with looking at the flood that we mentioned last week. Now, there was an archaeologist, a British archaeologist, Sir Charles Leonard Woolley. He was born 17th of April, 1880, and he died the 20th of February, 1960. And he was best known for his excavations at Ur in Mesopotamia. And you may have heard of Ur before, because Abraham came from Ur in Mesopotamia, and it's mentioned in the Old Testament. Now, he is recognised, Sir Charles Leonard Woolley, he is recognised as one of the first modern archaeologists who excavated in a methodical way, keeping careful records and using them to reconstruct ancient life and history. Because at this time, around about 1900, it was at the height of the British Empire, and a lot of British intellectuals were digging around in India, digging around in the Near East, in the Levant, and just discovering these amazing ruins that have been covered up with the sands of time, basically. They discovered Troy out in India. They discovered the birthplace of the Buddha. They discovered the library at Nineveh. And they discovered these cuneiform tablets that we were talking about last time. It was a fantastic time of exploration and discovery, really, around about 1900. And the British were really at the forefront of it. When you see Indiana Jones, that's the sort of people that these archaeologists were. And Ur was the burial site of what may have been many Sumerian royals, as well as being the birthplace of the biblical Abraham. Woolley discovered tombs there containing great material wealth, along with large paintings of ancient Sumerian culture at its zenith, along with gold and silver jewellery, cups and other furnishings. And you really have to see this stuff to believe it, because it is so well made. They were incredible artisans. And Woolley was one of the first archaeologists to propose that the flood described in the Book of Genesis was a local flood, after identifying a flood stratum at Ur 400 miles long and 100 miles wide. But for the occupants of the valley, that was the whole world. And that was a quote of his, saying that for the occupants of the valley, that was the whole world. And the clay itself was 8 foot thick in some places and 18 inches thick at the lowest found in that area. And when the clay was analysed, it was found to contain fossils of marine life, implying that the sea had flooded in to cover the entire land. And Woolley actually found two other locations with evidence of this flood alongside the evidence he found at Ur. There was also Kish and Shurupak, and both of those are important places. Shurupak is of particular interest because, according to the Mesopotamian legend, Shurupak was the home of Zarathustra, who was the Sumerian Noah. The Sumerian Zarathustra means life of long days, and the Akkadian equivalent, Utnapishtim, means he who found life, while the alternative, Atrahasis, means exceedingly wise. Because basically, in Mesopotamia, you have these records of this flood, and you have records of somebody surviving the flood. And each people says it was their man that survived the flood. The Sumerians say it was Zarathustra, it was their man, and the Akkadians say it was Utnapishtim. They say that it was their man. And this flood level separated the late proto-literate remains from the early dynastic one remains. So that means this. The first remains, underneath this flood, they weren't able to write, and there wasn't really much evidence of civilization. After this flood, what they call the early dynastic one remains, then you start to get proper literacy and you get civilization. And the date of this is about 2950 to 2850 50 BCE, so round about 3000 BC. And earlier researchers, when they first actually found this flood layer, they claimed that it actually dated back to 4000 BC. But it actually dates back to 3000 BC, and it's after this flood that's when we get the real evidence of proper civilization. And underneath this flood layer, you've just got ruins, really. You haven't got any evidence of metal working, no evidence of calendars or a highly developed system of social control or anything like that, and mainly no evidence of writing. So I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
The only thing, the only question I had was kind of just a thought, really, in general, that I wondered, with Adam being the first white man, and there's a point in Genesis where it talks about Adam named the animals. I thought that maybe that could be somewhat allegorical for, communicating and, through the written language or whatnot. But obviously, if that would have been a lot earlier than the flood, so that obviously wasn't the case in the times of Adam. There wouldn't have been writing if the narrative that you're putting forward here is accurate.
Or it could have been that they carried writing through with them, but the remains of that got destroyed. Because what I think happened is that area, that area of Shumah, that's where Adam would have been, and that's also where Cain would have been, and it all just got destroyed. But the knowledge of how to write and the knowledge of civilization got carried through with Noah, I think, as we will see. People may say, well, this is all a little bit far-fetched, but wait until you see the evidence for it.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested in actually seeing some of these. Is there any images? And I haven't really seen a lot of the texts or artifacts. It would be interesting to maybe have a look at those.
Oh, they're fantastic. The ones from Ur, the stuff that he discovered in this tomb, are absolutely incredible. I mean, we'll talk about them in a bit, but they had a gold helmet, an incredibly intricately sculpted gold helmet made out of electrum plated gold, one sheet of electrum gold, and you can actually see the hairs on it, the wavy curls. And there was a golden ram that was in a thicket. There was a lyre there, so they knew how to play the harp. There was a bull. There was a crown for his wife. Everything that you think about when you think about the Tutankhamun tomb and the great riches that were in that, Woolley discovered in this tomb from Ur that was from about 2500 BC. And as we'll see when we get to it, the Bronze Age didn't actually start until 300 BC. So literally within a couple of centuries, they were skilled artisans in working with gold and all sorts. And the tablets themselves, there are lots of these tablets that you can see if you look them up. And you imagine these libraries. They found the library of Ashurbanipal. They found the library at Nineveh, and literally thousands of these clay tablets that have been preserved over time. You think papyrus is going to get rotten and it's going to fall apart, and vellum over a few centuries, unless vellum is sealed, that's going to fall apart as well. But thankfully, clay tablets, they're going to last. So we can learn by reading these tablets what was going on back then, and they are particularly interesting as well. Well, moving on to this city of Kish that I said is also of particular importance, because the earliest known king's list that we have says that the kingship began here at Kish. And this list was not actually written at the time, but we have copies of it from 2000 BC. So the copies were written 1,000 years later. And the copies tell us that after the flood had swept over and the kingship had descended from heaven, the kingship was in Kish. And Kish is the exact same word as Cush, the name of the son of Noah, because there were no vowel sounds back then used for writing. So the actual word is K-S-H, which is Cush. And the list also tells us that the first king was called Jusha and that his successor was called Kulasena Bel. But actually, that's not his successor. That's a sentence in Akkadian meaning all of them were Lord. So it's saying all these people were lords of some kind. And this kingship list was compiled between 1 and 2,000 years after the first kings at Kush. And this much later date for the actual compiling of it may explain the polytheism of the king list compilers that differs from the monotheism that we are told Cush's grandfather Noah had in the Bible. And the Bible actually tells us that the first civilization after the flood was started by Cush and the sons of Cush. So the Bible tells us that this is where civilization started after the flood. And the Mesopotamian texts also say that this is where civilization started after the flood. And the Akkadians, they call them Semites because some of them are descended from Shem, some of them are descended from Ham. Basically, all the descendants from Noah, the nations that are descended from Noah, they actually call them Semites because of the language to differentiate them from the Sumerian language. And the Akkadian Empire, which ended up splitting Sumer into Babylon in the south and Assyria in the north, they were descended from Noah. So they had a slightly different language, and they adapted these Sumerian legends to fit in with their own legends, and they put their own gods in the place of the Sumerian gods. But when you actually look at the names of these kings, they're all Akkadian names. So this list tells us that kingship started in Cush, which was named after Noah's son. And it also tells us that all the kings in Cush had spoke the same language as Noah did, because they are Akkadian names that are written down. So what that's basically saying is it's confirming the biblical narrative. But we'll see that there's been attempts to distort that as well. Do you want to add anything there before I point out the sons of Noah and Cush?
No. I'm just learning at the moment, really.
Some of this is new to me. I've been like looking into this and looking through the older books that I've got here, and some of it is new to me. I didn't click that when kingship started in Kish that it meant the same thing as Cush.
Yeah.
Well, the Bible tells us that the first civilization after the flood was started by Cush and the sons of Cush. And I quote here from Genesis 10. It says, "And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth." And if we remember the term mighty from the offspring of the sons of God in Genesis 6, sometimes called the Nephilim, who were said to be mighty men, which were of old, men of renown. So they were famous men. So they're using the same term here, mighty. That they use for the sons of God and the Nephilim before the flood. They're using the same term here to call Cush's son Nimrod, that saying he was a mighty one in the earth. And it continues, "He was a mighty hunter before the Lord, wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of his kingdom was Babel and Erech and Akkad and Calneh in the land of Shinar." And Shinar is the land of Shumer. "Out of that land went forth Asher and builded Nineveh and the city Rehoboth and Calah." And that's when the Akkadians took over, and they put Asher, Assyria, at the top with Nineveh, and then they put Babylon at the bottom in the south. Then it says, "And Rezin between Nineveh and Calah, the same is a great city. And Mizraim begat Ludim and Anamim and Lehabim and Naphtahim." And Mizraim was the original name for Egypt. So that's talking about the Egyptians. So basically what you've got there is you've got the first civilization builders after the flood were descended from Ham and then through Cush. But it's described as Semitic because they spoke a different language to the Sumerians, even though they're actually, strictly speaking, they're Hamites or they're Cushites. And also the Cushites, the actual name Cush was also given to the land that was next to Egypt, which is now called Ethiopia. So originally that country had white people in it. This city here, which is called Cush, that had white people in it. And you've also got the Hindu Kush, which is all the way over there in India. So that's why you've got this name Cush all over the place, because this first empire that was set up by the Cushites, they left their name on these places. Do you want to comment on that at all?
Well, a bit of research, a slight digression, but I did some research some months ago, maybe a year or so ago. But I was looking at some ancient kind of writings and well, artistic illustrations of and maps of Ethiopia at the time of sort of the Middle Ages. And it's interesting to see that there were loads of kind of castles and very European looking. Just you on your point of Ethiopia being white, I think it was still there were still remnants of it being quite white, even in the Middle Ages. And these illustrations can still be found on the various online libraries if you look into it. And it's almost like our fingerprint there is almost kind of just been smeared over and washed out of history.
It's one of those instances where it's got black people there now, so people assume it always had black people there. I think it's Herodotus writing at about 60 BC, and he talks about the Cushites in the land of Cush, and it's very clear that they're civilized and they're white, and he says that, and there is another people there as well, and they're not civilized. They're about as far from humanity as you could get, basically, and
Yeah, well, in some of
describes
these
them.
illustrations, sorry, some of these illustrations in Ethiopia, it showed the almost like an integration between, because it's almost like a multicultural society, but hundreds of years ago, and obviously that's how they turned out. They obviously intermingled and completely just became part of the genetic admixture in that region.
Yeah, you can see from the mosaics and the images that there are mixed race people there by about the 6th century, I think, and then you had that's the 6th century AD, and then the Muslims invaded, but about the time of Christ, you had white people there, and you also Moses marries a Cushite, and what that means is that Moses married a white woman, descended from Cush. Otherwise. Well, Moses would not have married someone who wasn't white, but they wouldn't have called her a Cushite if, unless she was descended from Cush, unless she was white. And they were very strict with their genealogies and their family trees. In all of this, we find that that was the most important thing was to record your family tree. Well, as I said, before the flood, there was no writing, and after the flood, writing appears and the Bronze Age starts. In myth, kingship was lowered from heaven to Eridu at first, and this is before the flood, right at the beginning. And some claim that Eridu was the original Eden of Genesis, as the two words mean the same thing. Now, kingship then passed successively through five cities until the flood, which ended the Uruk period, which is so called because Uruk was the main city-state. And remember, Uruk was the city that Cain built. So that whole area there, that was run by this city that Cain built. That was the one that was in charge before the flood. And there's no actual proof of any of these kings before then, before this flood period. But there is proof of the kings on this kings list afterwards. So no evidence has been found to corroborate this king list for before the flood, only for some of the kings afterwards. The biblical Adam and his descendants may have originally populated this area, alongside Cain's descendants and the gods or the host of heaven or the fallen angels. And I say that because in the book of Genesis, we're told that the sons of the gods were around on the earth at that time. We're also told that people ended up worshipping the host of heaven. So whatever the host of heaven were, they were there. And we're also told in the book of Jude that there were angels that left their estate. So there were fallen angels. So it looks like gods, the host of heaven, and the fallen angels, they were all a particular type. That's what it's referred to in the Bible. But then we have the Sumerian texts who refer to a group called the Anunnaki. Their gods were called the Anunnaki. But as we will see, these gods were more like humanoids, more like advanced humanoids. And the Sumerian texts actually have Adam being created as a priest king after these Anunnaki had already created another 14 humans from the blood of a slain god mixed with the slave caste that they had already created. And the Sumerians have the Adam being created with the seed of the Anunnaki god Enki, who was traditionally depicted as the serpent lord of the Euphrates. and Adam appears in the Mesopotamian texts under the names of Adapa, Ataba, and Adama. So what we see here is the gods of the Sumerians, which they called the Anunnaki, they were creating different types of human being. And they did that with the blood of a slain god mixed with a slave caste that they had already created. And what we're seeing is that they are creating new breeds from what is already there. Whereas what we're told in the Bible is that a god, there is a god that creates ex nihilo. He creates out of nothing. He speaks his word and something is created. So the very fact that these gods of the Sumerians couldn't do that, they could only create with what was already there, tells us that they were false gods. So what is referred to in the Old Testament as the host of heaven or the fallen angels or the sons of the gods, the Sumerians referred to them as the Anunnaki. And I think we can see here that Adam was too important a person to pretend he did not exist. So instead of doing that 2,000 years later, because that's when these tablets are actually written down, 2,000 years later, the followers of the Anunnaki usurped him and had him created by their own gods, who were originally the host of heaven. And after the flood, it also included deified kings. And we can see this very thing happen again when the Akkadians took over Sumer, when they replaced the Sumerian Enki with their own Babylonian god Marduk in the same legends. So we can see the same thing happening again, basically hijacking a story and putting your own people in the place of the protagonists. So what we've got is we've got something happening and we've got different witnesses to what was happening, if you can see what I mean. Do you want to comment on that?
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I guess I've got a couple of questions about about some of the things you just mentioned. One of the things I'm curious about is the records of the biblical narrative of creation. Would they have any of them been discovered before the written accounts of the Bible, Moses, and so on, to kind of prove that these were the original stories? And kind of, usurped by the Sumerians, just to kind of as hard proof that it wasn't the other way around.
Well, what we've got, as I was explaining last week, when we've got the Old Testament that was written down by Moses, he wrote it down on papyrus because that was how he was taught to write by the Egyptians. But the style of writing shows that he was actually copying from tablets, and the tablets themselves have the witnesses and that were actually writing the tablet or who had paid the scribe to write the tablet. And it tells you at what time in their life they had this tablet written, and it gives you their eyewitness account. So you have three eyewitness accounts for Noah, which was obviously his three sons. So the book of Genesis is compiled together from the various tablets that were owned by these families that were in Moses' care. And that's the only way that it could have happened, because he was writing 1500 years after these tablets had gone out of use. So he wouldn't have been able to fake that, because it's just in the actual style of writing, because the style of writing was to tell you in which order you had to actually read the tablets in. And some of these tablets got mixed up. That's why some of the Bible appears to have been written in the wrong way, as if one part of it is happening happened earlier but you're reading it later, and that's because the tablets got mixed up, because he may not have known the correct way to put the tablets together. But it's quite clear that it was actually written on tablets. But also, when you look at that first two chapters of Genesis, they don't actually have a name for the sun or the moon. Whereas in these other tablets, the Sumerian ones, they have names for these things. Whereas in the book of Genesis, they don't. True. So it was before that these things had actually been given a name. And I think as we get further on with this as well, we'll see that there's more proofs of the fact that the Genesis account was the original one. And also because in the Sumerian ones, they don't make any mention of Elohim, which is the name for Yahweh or the Christian God in Genesis. It's Elohim. But we will see that when the Akkadians take over, the Akkadians had Elohim as part of their pantheon of gods, which was also the same gods of the Canaanites. They had El Elyon or El Shaddai, which was the name for the Elohim, which was the name for the Christian God.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that. Go on.
I was going to say, with the continuation of the name Adam, obviously you outlined the original meaning in the ancient Paleo-Hebrew. But as we see that it went on to become Adapa, Ataba, and Adama, do you think they retained the descriptive meaning behind Adam as well? Therefore, you know, by creating an Adam-based race, that infers that they could blush as well, or do you think they merely just took the name and the meaning behind it was irrelevant?
No, I think they had a similar story. They said that it was a figure that was created from clay. So they had a similar story, but then they had a slain god that was added to it. And well, we'll hear the details of it anyway, because I've got some of the quotes of these details here. They said that he was a priest king, and it's basically hijacking the Hebrew story or the Noahide or the Adamite story and adding it to the Sumerian one. And the Akkadians took the Sumerian one and added their bits to it as well. And the fact that these gods can't actually create for nothing, they can only create with what's already there, tells us that they came later than the original one, if you see what I mean. Sure.
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. I guess I'm just trying to understand if the race that they claimed to create was also white, because the name Adam is rooted in essentially whiteness, or being able to blush in the face. Since they carried on the name Ataba, Adapa, would it have retained its original meaning?
I don't know if it would have retained its original meaning of being able to blush in the face, but you've got to bear in mind that these was created by the host of heaven. So you've got angelic beings here. And we've already been told that they're mighty men. They were the mighty men of old. They were worshipped as gods by the Greeks. So they were beyond the sort of humanity that we have now. And also, like, Adam's sons were also beyond the humanity that we have now, because Nimrod, who became a mighty hunter in the earth, he was descended directly from Noah, and yet he was given the same name as these mighty ones and these Nephilim. So they were similar types, but the type that came from the Sumerians, the type that came from the Anunnaki, was corrupted in some way. But they still looked like perfect human beings, but they were larger than normal. They were mighty ones. They were worshipped as gods. As it says, I mean, I think even when you look today, you can still see that, occasionally you get good looking or Aryan type looking types that are mixed types. But let's get into these details of what happened here. I mean, in the Bible, we are only told about what God, or Elohim to use the correct name, created. We are then told that the sons of Elohim took wives of the daughters of men, and they gave birth to the mighty men of old, men of renown, and we are told that they corrupted the way of all flesh upon the earth. So what that is saying is what it calls here the sons of the Elohim, that's the Anunnaki, and they corrupted the way of all the flesh on the earth. And this race-mixing event caused the flood to be required to eliminate all these corrupted kinds. We are later told in the book of Jude that it was the fallen angels that did this. The flood destroyed their children, and they were then imprisoned on earth under chains of everlasting darkness. And some people may read into that may be a reference to the darker races. And I just need to break here for a cough. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
I'm just curious as to, I mean, obviously the flood we've established was regional, and I know that there's been records of the flood in other civilizations, such as, you know, ancient China. I'm sure that they've recorded on it, and I've read and heard that the Aztecs as well reported on a flood. Now, if they're the same event, then there obviously would have been some, you know, non-Adamic races and civilizations out in the world. So, you know, not everyone would have been, you know, in the flood.
Well, yeah, there could have been different floods. There could have been different floods at different times. What was specifically done here was getting rid of the people that were in this particular area, the ones that were descended from these particular people. And so a particular type was got rid of in that one area. I mean, the references to floods happening elsewhere, they may have happened at the same time. They may have happened at different times. They may have been, you know, there may have been a period when there was a huge flood before there even was any humanity on the earth. But what we're talking about here is this specific flood that happened that was in a localized area that wiped out the people that were living in that area. And the people that were living in that area were the descendants of Cain and the descendants of Adam, and also the creatures that were created by the Anunnaki. But what we're actually told in these Sumerian texts is after the flood. In the Sumerian text, they have Adam being created after the flood and all of these things happening after the flood. Whereas we're told in the Old Testament that this happened before the flood, and it was the reason why they had the flood. If we just go into that, and then we'll come back to this, because I think there's some details in it here that might illuminate what you're referring to there. In the Sumerian tablets, we get the story as told by the priests of these fallen angels, how the fallen angels created their own people again after the flood. And here are some quotes from Lawrence Gardner on the subject with his references listed. And the references that he uses are not conspiracy type authors. They are the authorities on Sumerian history. Like the world-renowned authorities on this history is where he's actually getting these quotes from. It's important to make that point. In an ancient Sumerian text from Nippur, now held at the University of Pennsylvania Museum, it is specifically stated that Anu, Enlil, Enki, and Ninkasag, that's the Anunnaki, had themselves fashioned the black-headed people, the slave class of Shuma. And that's a quote from Kramer, from a book called History Begins at Shuma. So they're saying that they created the black-headed people there, which is what I mentioned last week, the actual name of Shuma. It referred to these black-headed people, and yet the Sumerians themselves were blonde. So who were these black-headed people? Well, that was the slave class that they had. And the instruction to do this came first from the dragon queen Tiamat, and that was the head of the Tiamat of the Anunnaki. And the dragon queen is the serpent, basically. And that was their head god, or head goddess, was the serpent, the primeval mother of the Anunnaki, who said to Enki, "Rise from your bed and work what is wise. Fashion servants of the gods, and may they produce their doubles." And that's from Kramer's book, Mythologies of the Ancient World. So they created what would have in effect been similar to white people, because they would have been doubles of the angelic beings, the angelic types. Some accounts include the saving of Enki's semen to be applied to the cross-fertilization of other life forms. And that's from Jacobson T., The Treasure of Darkness. And all of these books are looked at in universities. They're not wacky books that are being referred to here. The Atrahasis epic records that Ea, or Enki, and Ninigiku, or Ninkursag, created 14 new humans after the flood, 7 boys and 7 girls, and the clinical process included the wombs of women who had survived the deluge. In one instance, the opening of a navel is detailed, and the wombs are called the creatrices of destiny. It is related that these wombs completed Ninkasag's work by developing the forms of the people that she made. And that's from the Atrahasis Epic, Fragment 4, Column 4. Which is the Akkadian version of the Sumerian story. So what it's basically saying there is they created these new humans, and they put the fetuses into the wombs of women who had already survived the deluge. So they're not gods. They can't actually create. What they're doing is messing around with something that's already been created. And I think this is what happened before the flood, but they're saying this happened after the flood, this trying to explain how the different races that we have actually came about. And the fundamental difference between the Sumerian records and the Genesis version of the creation of modern humankind is that the new men and women did not emerge in ready-made adult form. They were scientifically induced with human ova fertilized by the Anunnaki to be placed as cultured embryos into the wombs of surrogate mothers. As a result, they were born quite naturally as babies. And that's from Jacobson T, The Treasure of Darkness. And Adam was created as a fully grown adult, the same as the Earth was created as a fully grown Earth. There's no other way it could have happened because everything relies upon everything else. The earthworm has to rely upon there being dead trees in order for there to be earth for him to dig around in. And the earthworm turns the dead trees into earth that the trees can then live in, or that a sea can then find the correct conditions in which to live in. So basically everything is all linked in together. You couldn't just have one thing and then something else grows. It has to all appear at once. That's why they say, what came first, the chicken or the egg? They both had to have appeared at the same time. So you have one account of Adam being created as an adult, and then you have this Sumerian account where they ended up having to put the fetuses into the wombs of other beings in order to create new beings. So what you've got now is you've got the black-headed people that were created, and you've got another type of human being that was created in order to serve the Anunnaki. It is clear from the Mesopotamian texts that the Sumerians, who emerged from Ninkasag's work, believed that their main purpose in life was to serve the Anunnaki by providing them with food, drink, and habitation. In return, they were educated and trained in social skills and academic affairs. Again, that's from Jacobson T, The Treasure of Darkness. A more advanced plan was then conceived to create a prototype for a race of superior earthly leaders. With this in mind, it was decided to place a cultured embryo into Ninkasag's own womb instead of into a mortal woman's womb, so that it was fed with Anunnaki blood. This was supposedly the Adam of the Genesis account being created, and the Sumerians placed him as being created after the flood rather than before. But this account is from 1400 BC, 1400 years after the flood. And it is being retold by Babylonians, who, as we saw, replaced Enki with Marduk. So we've got three different types that they're talking about there that they created. And I think what they did is they hijacked the creation of Adam, if you see what I mean, because they're saying that Adam was created there from inside the womb of this goddess. And he was created by one of these gods, adding his sperm to one of these beings that had already been created. And what they had been doing is then putting those beings back into the wombs of one of the humans already created, and instead they put that one into the womb of the goddess, and that was how this new being was created. So they're basically hijacking the Genesis story. And Yahweh or Elohim does go on.
I was just gonna say, we're literally talking about IVF, aren't we here?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, this is a relatively new discovery. I mean, had it been discovered earlier, they wouldn't have kind of believed it or understood it, really, because obviously IVF wasn't possible back then, but it's a highly scientific process.
Yeah, who knows how they did it? I mean, they found these tablets about 150 years ago, and yeah, I think they translated them. Probably around about the time of the war, they were translated, and these books came out with these translations in the 50s and the 60s.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, were the Anunnaki and this offspring literal, you know, giants? Because if they were put into regular women, then surely the giants would outgrow the womb, you know.
Well, they would be born as babies. That's what they were saying here. They were born as babies.
And then they just grew into a bigger stature.
Well, then they grew into a particular type. And there was 14 created, seven men and seven women, so that they could people a new servant class. There was they say that there was this Adam created, along with obviously a wife for him, and they also created these black-headed people. So basically, they're messing around with what has already been created to create new beings, which is what we're told in Genesis happened. We're told that all flesh was corrupted on the earth, and the sons of God took the wives of the daughters of men, and they created humanoids, and that's why there was a flood that destroyed it all. And what we're told here is
the biblical narrative sounds a little bit more like they saw them as being beautiful, and so it kind of infers that, you know, they procreated through natural, you know, sexual intercourse. But obviously this describes it differently, but maybe the biblical narrative is, you know, wasn't alluding to sex.
I mean, how are they going to explain that? And also, the biblical narrative is just, it's you know, it's just a few sentences, and then to try and get this information across, because there's so much information to get across, and the wider knowledge of it. I mean, there must have been, like we have libraries today, there must have been lots and lots of records about this at the time. It's just that all that we have now is the biblical account from the biblical side of it. Because Judea and Jerusalem, that all got destroyed by the Assyrians, and they lost all their records. I mean, all of these records, all of these Sumerian tablets have been lost for thousands of years, and they were just found like 150 years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing.
In the desert. So at the time when this was happening, there was probably a lot more information on it about. There probably is a lot more information in these libraries that they're probably hiding. You know, I'm surprised they let this out.
I'd love to have a day in somewhere like the Vatican Vault. I mean, can you imagine what kind of glimpse into the past and documents and, you know, artifacts that they've got that the wider world doesn't know about?
Well, a lot of this is held in Iraq, and of course ISIS have destroyed a load of it. I mean, really, it should be held in the London Museum. I mean, it's white people's history, and yet because it took place in Mesopotamia, which is Iraq, basically, that's where it was kept. So a lot of it's just disappeared. At one point, I wanted to make Yahweh or Elohim does not appear in the Sumerian accounts, but he does appear in the Akkadian accounts as El Shaddai, El Elyon, and the Elohim, as the Akkadians were descended from Noah through Shem. And although they had become corrupted over time with these former beliefs of the Sumerians, they also retained their knowledge of El Elyon, which is the name that Abraham knew him as. So when we get to the Canaanite accounts, when we get to the Akkadian accounts, they include El Shaddai, El Elyon, or Elohim, which is the God that created Adam. Which tends to confirm this, that the Sumerians were following Cain, and they were following the host of heaven, and Noah's people were following El Elyon, or the Elohim. And then Noah's descendants retained their knowledge of El Elyon, and they had him within this pantheon, and they grafted on the Sumerian pantheon on along with their pantheon of gods, basically.
Right. Okay.
Now, after the flood, kingship passed to the city of Kish, named after Noah's son Cush, at the beginning of the early dynastic period, which corresponds to the beginning of the early Bronze Age in Sumer. In the first part of the early dynastic period, that's 2900 to 2800, Iraq was in theory under the control of Kish. So straight after the flood, you've got the city called Cush, named after Noah's son, and the city that Cain built, that's under the control of Cush. And this period is sometimes called the Golden Age. During the second part of the early dynastic period, 2800 to 2600, Uruk was once again the dominant city, exercising control of Shuma. This period is the time of the first dynasty of Iraq, sometimes called the Heroic Age. And with Iraq back in control again, that may have corresponded with a lapse back into polytheism and the telling of the flood myth by witnesses who followed the Anunnaki rather than the god of Adam and Noah. So you can see that once it was under the control of Noah's people for a few hundred years, and then it was back again, it was under the control of Cain's people. So this is yeah. why the records that are there are told from that point of view rather than from the point of view of Noah's people. And also the fascinating thing is the Bronze Age just suddenly started. So you got writing and you suddenly got the Bronze Age. You suddenly got all these wonders of civilization that just suddenly exploded forth after this flood in 3000 BC. And this is the dynastic period, which was associated with a shift from the temple establishment headed by a council of elders and led by a priestly En towards a more secular Lugal ruling. Lu means man and Gal means great. So it is possibly a similar title to the mighty men of old referred to in Genesis. Because if you can say great man, I mean, it's similar to mighty man, isn't it? So these yeah, people they're referred to as the Lugals. These Lugals claimed descent from such legendary patriarchal figures as Dumuzid, Lugalbanda, and Gilgamesh, who all reigned shortly before the historical record opens, when the now deciphered syllabic writing started to develop from the early pictograms. So the new kings were given the same name as the godmen of old, and the godmen of old began to be worshipped in their own right. So the people from before the flood, they sort of deified and started to worship. Gilgamesh was a wild man who is often depicted holding a lion or wild animals in each hand. He also appears on the Sutton Hoo purse clasp, which is supposedly taken from a Saxon hoard, but is much more likely to be Welsh or Brittonic. And the Epic of Gilgamesh is one of our oldest surviving religious texts in its original clay tablet format, with the oldest complete telling of it being from 1800 BC. So if Saxons just spent all their time in Germany, what are they doing with Gilgamesh on the Sutton Hoo purse clasp? Or what are the Welsh doing with Gilgamesh on the Sutton Hoo purse clasp?
Yeah, I mean, they must have got exposed to it somewhere, you know.
It's part of our history. It's part of the white man's history that has been hidden from us, or that we've forgotten about.
Yeah.
The events talked about in the Gilgamesh epic go back to before 3000 BC, and although Gilgamesh was a king before the flood, in the text, he visits the Sumerian Noah, thus implying that he lived after him and not before. And it is things like this that discredit these Akkadian sources as witnesses to what was happening centuries before, and show the Genesis account to be more reliable, as it does not contradict itself, and it lists the eyewitnesses, while also showing the same format as the original cuneiform tablets, despite it being written on papyrus. So this Gilgamesh epic is supposed to be one of our oldest texts, and yet it contradicts what we know, because he was a king before the flood, and yet in this text, he visits the Sumerian Noah, which he can't have done if he was living before the flood, because the Sumerian Noah wasn't alive.
Yeah.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. I guess there's two things there, isn't there? There's obviously the fact that the Sumerian story isn't kind of... It contradicts itself, but also there's still the connection there.
Well, I think
Western whites.
Yeah, there's. I mean, these are all stories of what was going on at the birth of civilization and like the earliest recorded memories of mankind. So what you've got there is you've got a group of false gods that couldn't actually create, and they're telling their story of how they created these various different types of people, the black-headed people, and an Arab-type people, another type people that was in Mesopotamia, and they also tried to hijack the story of Adam and claim that they also created Adam. So that's what's going on there. And then the descendants of Noah ended up becoming corrupted with these ways of the Anunnaki and the other people groups that they already had in Mesopotamia, these people groups that were descended from the serpent. So you got different races on Earth, basically. The white race, we're given the description of how the white race is created in the Bible, but we're not told how these other races are created. Whereas the other races, we're told in these tablets, were created by the Anunnaki, by the host of heaven, from what was already here.
Yeah, they probably don't want to get that in the mainstream, do they?
No.
Because obviously, I think it was the Catholic Church that started preaching universalism doctrine, didn't they? So it was probably almost like a capitalist move to make more money, you know, get more people on board, you know, fill the pockets more. So let's just incorporate everyone into it. You know, every different race can be involved in this. So I think it was essentially a money spinner, the notion of universalism, and even the subject of the Gentiles. In the Old Testament, it defines the isles of the Gentiles being the descendants of Noah, and even today, the Gentiles, which in Latin means our family, our family, and related by blood, and we assume today Gentiles is everyone, but it actually strictly means nations, doesn't it? But they'll be the nations of the extension of Noah, his sons.
Yeah, just Gentiles just means nation or ethnos. But we always got to remember that we've got the forces of the lie arrayed against us. So constantly, it's like that film that says the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist. You know, constantly we've got forces that are against us to try and subvert what's going on and trying to lie to us about our past and to make us go down the wrong path, basically, trying to tempt us all the time. So it's a struggle to remain virtuous, and it's a struggle to find the truth because it's all hidden. But that's what we're told we should be doing. But we also should be finishing because we've gone a little bit over time here, Patriarch. So I think we'll leave it there for today. So thank you very much for coming on today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me again.
And thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next week with more patriotic history for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.